I left my heart in San Francisco.
This hour, we've got a how-to guide for appreciating not just San Francisco, but all cities, past, present, maybe even future. That's the topic this hour. I'm Rob Verrett, filling in this week for Kathleen Dunn. It's 7 minutes after 10 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. My guest this hour is P.D. Smith. His newest book is City, a guidebook for the urban age. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the show. There you are. P.D. Smith, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Hi. Thanks a lot for joining us. Now, before we get to your book, I want to focus in on one city. You're in London, are you not?
Yeah, I live just outside London, but yes, yeah.
And you're getting a little bit of attention right now with the Olympics. Are you recognizing the city on the TV as the city that you spend time in?
Yes, I think so, yes. I mean, sport is one of the great things about cities, too. That's an aspect of the cities that I describe in the book. The Olympics and that, the origins of the Olympics, I suppose. And Athens was, it was quite important there. They had their own local kind of versions of the Olympics right back sort of thousands of years ago. So, yes, sport is right there as one of the sort of subjects that you deal with when you look at cities as well, one of the great sort of entertainment things as well. What with the Colosseum in Rome, that was one of the sort of key ways of keeping the population of Rome happy, I suppose, basically.
And better the Olympics, maybe, than gladiatorial combat?
Absolutely, yes, that's true.
Now, what led you to want to try to write a guide to cities, to a guidebook for the urban age?
Well, the original idea was really because I wanted to sort of celebrate cities in a way that, you hear quite a lot of bad publicity about cities, a lot of talk about urban problems and things like crime and that. And I wanted to celebrate the idea of cities, not just sort of individual cities, but the sort of the idea of living, coming together and living in cities. I wanted to write a sort of history book about this, so it goes right back to the first cities and looks for sort of continuities running through urban life. So the core idea was really to write something that doesn't ignore the problems that are there in cities, which are always there in human societies, but it celebrates cities.
And looking back at those first cities, obviously that was a big change for humankind. And now, and you note toward the beginning of the book that now more than half of humans across the globe live in cities. How important is that? What does that change for us?
Yes, and it's a rising sort of figure as well. So within our lifetimes, in a generation, there will be sort of 75% of the world will be living in cities. Well, it's really part of a trend. I mean, Britain was one of the first countries in the industrial age which had half of its population living in cities. So it shows a sort of general historical trend towards people moving into cities. So it's important in aspect as a global trend. And it's important for the way people live their lives, I suppose, which is one of the things which the book explores, a sort of culture of urban life. So it means, I suppose, in a sense, that the way we live will change as a planet, the way people are living, rather than having rural existences, farming and that, people will be living in cities and have urban lifestyles.
Now, you open your book with a chapter on arrival, and you talk about people seeing cities for the first time, from the Spanish seeing the great Aztec cities for the first time and beyond. For us, say we're going to a new city in the United States or around the world for the first time, what's the best way to get that sense of awe and wonder when we go into the city?
Well, when I go to a new city, and most of my holidays are spent in cities, I don't really go sort of beach holidays and things. I've always loved going to cities, new cities, and exploring them. I do sort of buy, I like to buy a couple of guidebooks or something to get just a sort of historical sense. You want to be able to place the city in some kind of history and also geography, I suppose, so that you do understand a little bit about it, the context of the place. So I would tend to do that. But then when you get there, you don't want to be sort of overwhelmed with sort of facts and figures about the city you're living, you're going to stay in. You want to sort of wander around it a bit and maybe sort of get lost a bit or just to sort of experience. Because cities are very, although my book tends to explore the subject as a kind of generic kind of idea of a city, it looks at a kind of, it's designed as a guidebook to an imaginary city, kind of every city. But of course, every city is very different. They're all unique. They all have their sort of wonderful aspects that you need to discover in a way for yourself, I suppose. And I think the best way of doing that is just walking around, if you can, ideally, and just sort of looking and sort of opening yourself to the city in some ways, just to just sense what the... I mean, you can go and sort of sit in a cafe or a bar or something and just sort of watching the people going by. I mean, that's just wonderful. That's like sort of urban theatre, just watching people on the street. So that's one way you can sort of find out about cities, both the sort of history and also the people, the sort of culture there.
I was lucky enough, the first time I visited New York and the first time I visited San Francisco, I was lucky enough to know someone there and stay with them. And then have them guide me on massive, massive walking trips, a big arc through both of the cities. Mm-hmm. Talk about walking as a way in particular to really dig into a city.
Yes, we actually did that recently. In March, we were in Tokyo and Kyoto. And for the first time, I've not done this before, we actually hired, it was partly because of the language problem, I suppose, in Japan, but we hired a local guide to sort of take us around each city for a day. And that, as you say, that's a sort of wonderful way of sort of having a sort of insight into a city from someone who speaks the language, who lives there, and they can sort of show you the city from the inside, as it were. But walking around it is very important, I think. I'm sort of aware that some American cities, I suppose, something like Las Vegas, I believe, or maybe Los Angeles, you don't really, it's more of a car city or something. You have to get everywhere by car. Whereas I suppose in the more classical sort of European cities and also Far Eastern cities, walking is one of the key ways of exploring and getting around a city. And to me, that seems a kind of natural way of doing it. But you get a sort of, it's just a sort of street level sense of things. And you can also sort of stop when you want to without, you're not sort of cocooned inside a car, I suppose is partly what I'm saying. And you're sort of, you can hear things, you can see things, you can smell the city. I mean, if you're in a marketplace or something, you can smell all the amazing smells of the food and the spices and things. And so these are all important aspects of experiencing cities, I think.
Rob Ferret here, filling in for Kathleen Dunn. I'm talking to P.D. Smith. He's the author of City, a Guidebook for the Urban Age. We're talking about cities, why we should love them, even if we don't, and the value of going to cities, checking them out, enjoying them. And I want to hear from you. You can give some of the particulars here. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. I have a couple questions for you. What has been your favorite visit to a city? United States, around the world, you name it. Or what's your dream city to go to? And here's, money is no object and time is no object. The city you would want to visit, past or present, or maybe future if you're that creative. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, email talk@wpr.org. You can also tell us about a great city walk you've taken or your first impression of a city.
You mentioned New York, actually. One of the first times I went there was in 1997, and that was quite sort of an overwhelming experience for me, because coming from London, as you said earlier, we don't have that many, or up to and then we didn't have that many sort of skyscrapers. And so going to New York, that's the first time I'd sort of experienced a completely vertical city, and it is a really quite overwhelming experience. That, I mean, people who live in New York, they probably don't sort of realize that, maybe, what people who have never been there before. This is quite an extraordinary experience, I think. And for people that you said about, one of the first sections is arrival, that's a sort of key theme in the book. It's like trying to open people's eyes to cities as if they haven't seen them before. And that's what I'm sort of trying to do in a way. I was trying to recapture and communicate that sense that I had when I went to, say, New York for the first time, or Hong Kong, which is another very vertical city, and trying to sort of explain that, or try to put that across a bit more again. So for me, yeah, going to New York then, that was amazing. It's really quite extraordinary city, and the architecture and the sort of, yeah, there's the sheer verticality of it. It's like you sort of colonized a different dimension in space, or it's moving up. Like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. I grew up in a small town in Michigan, cows across the dirt road, cornfield behind us. And I remember my first visits to Detroit and Toronto. The tall buildings just looming over you everywhere was quite an amazing first impression. But I really, what sticks with me is the smells of the food in Greektown in Detroit and in downtown Chicago, this mingling of really spicy exotic foods that I'd never encountered before with diesel exhaust. And it doesn't sound good, but I still to this day, I'll get that nostalgia when I smell that combination of smells.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, that's great. Yes, yeah, things like that, they do, as you say, stay with you, and they sort of colour your whole view of cities and then certain cities. Yes, it's important. Yes, yeah, yeah. One of the first places we went to Tokyo recently was the market there, the Tsukiji, the market, fish market. Mm-hmm. And it's this huge market. I think there's like 1,500 stalls, and you have to get there quite early. And as you say, the smells of it are just incredible. They really, and now when I think of Tokyo, I think of this fish market. But, yeah.
And can you eat actually at that fish market?
Yeah, you can. There are stalls there. Not in the. There's a sort of wholesale part of it, which is not really a sort of retail. So it's dealing with other shops are buying the fish then to take off and sell. But there are around the edges of it. Yes, there are stalls where you can buy. We had sort of a barbecued eel at one point, and the sushi there is amazing. Yeah, as fresh as you could get it, I think. Yeah.
And that reminds me. One of the things I like about your book is. You've got kind of your main narratives, but you have a lot of sidebars. The book is packed with sidebars, focusing in on a feature of cities in general or a particular city. And as I recall, one of them was on local food, the food carts or the food stalls. Is that a great way to appreciate cities, just hitting those food stalls?
Yes, the sort of street food. That's right. There is a sort of essay on the street foods and that. And yes, I think that is actually, yeah. If you're daring in some country, yes, you get all sorts of food. Yes, that's right.
What's been your favorite street food that you've encountered?
Oh, the favorite one. Well, I like Chinese food, sort of little dim sum, sort of bao, they call them buns and that. I like those very much. I'm very partial to that. Yeah, in Shanghai and Beijing and that. You can get in Beijing, there's a whole street of these. There's a street food markets where they sell everything from sort of roasted scorpions and things to snakes and things, all incredible foods. Yeah.
And that turns it to the other side. You mentioned it being maybe an act of courage in some cases. What's been the scariest street food that you tried or that you decided to give a miss?
Actually, I wouldn't eat things like that. I have to admit,
fair enough, I'm with you.
Locusts always scare me at the sight of those. No, I'm not very keen on that. I prefer sort of something like sushi or something, or roasted eel or something, which we had on a skewer in Tokyo. I thought that was quite nice. We got that off a shop that was just selling them to people passing by, so that was nice.
And then you also mentioned returning that sense of wonder. What about people who live in a city? You know, I have friends in big cities, and I think there's almost a cliche that they only go to the great museums and things like that when they've got somebody visiting from out of town. Do we lose that sense of wonder when we live in the city?
Yes, that's very true. I think, yes. I mean, I don't live in London now, but I grew up on the outskirts of London, and I lived in London for about 10 years in the centre of London. And that is true, that when you actually live in the city, you, as you say, when people come to town, yeah, you take them all around the sites and that, and as you say, the great museums and things. And it's sad that you just become sort of immune to the wonder of cities. And again, that was one of the reasons I was trying to write this book, to sort of, yeah, to put that across to people, that the cities, we shouldn't take them for granted. They are amazing things. They have so many cultural and sort of technological things in them that we should sort of value, I think, actually.
That's P.D. Smith. He's author of City, a guidebook for the urban age. We're talking about cities, past, present, and future, how to enjoy them, how to appreciate them, and why to appreciate them. Love to hear from you. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. The best city, your favorite experience traveling to a city nearby or across the world. What was it? Or what's the place you're dreaming to go? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can email talk@wpr.org. You can always post on the Joy Cardine Show, the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. I'm filling in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob Ferret filling in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, Larry Mueller will be on after 11 and talking about stargazing. Summer's a great time for stargazing. A Perseid meteor shower coming up. Lots to talk about. That's coming up after 11. This hour, we are talking about cities. What we like about them. Maybe what we don't like about them, too, while you're at it. P.D. Smith is our guest. He's author of City, a guidebook for the urban age. You can join the show, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Tell us about your best city experience, your wildest city experience while you were traveling, a place you dream of going if money were no object. We'll get to the phones now. Laura in Cudahy is with us. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I'm calling because I just experienced the beauty of both London and Paris. Incredible places to be. And one of the things that I found as a visitor was using the metro, using the tube in London, and having that help me get around. And I think any city that is a world-class great city needs to have good public transportation, and that's something we actually need to work on here in Milwaukee.
And that's one of the things that stuck with you, all of London and Paris and the art and architecture, and you were really struck by the subways.
Well, you know, it helped me to get around everywhere. And, I mean, those are two incredible cities. I would not have been able to do half of what I did without their public transportation system, which not only did, you know, us as tourists use, but you can see that the locals use it all the time.
Gotcha. Thanks a lot for calling and sharing that story, Laura. P.D. Smith, you have a whole chapter on getting around.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I agree completely with Laura. The underground and the metro in Paris, they're very important. And again, they're one of these things which people, when you live in London, you kind of take it for granted. In fact, you often sort of curse it.
Oh, another tube ride.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, packed. And of course, they're in London, they're not air conditioned as they are some of the new ones in, say, Shanghai or Tokyo or that. So they can be quite unpleasant in some ways. But they're amazing things. They really are incredible. I mean, you have to remember as well, of course, when you complain about the discomfort now, when they were originally built, the London one certainly in about the 1860s, they, of course, they were using steam trains underground.
I can't see any downside there.
Sorry?
I can't see any downside to that.
No, it's incredible though.
A couple other things that struck me in the getting around chapter. Traffic jams are nothing new. You talk about traffic jams even in ancient Rome.
Yes, that's right. Yes, at one point they banned the traffic during the day, and so all the carts and that had to come in at night, which of course then stopped people sleeping because they were kept awake by the noise of it. So that was one of the things about researching this book, is that a lot of these things, you think of them as being sort of very modern problems, and they go back right to these sort of first cities sometimes. And that for me, that was fascinating. That was one of the most interesting things about researching it, actually.
And that highlights some of the unintended consequences sometimes of urban planning. You tackle one problem, daytime cart traffic in ancient Rome, and you create the other problem of keeping all of ancient Rome awake all darn night.
Absolutely, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, Rome, there, you're mentioning Rome. Rome is a fantastic city. I mean, it's a really beautiful city. And one of my sort of favorite experiences of being in a city was, I describe it briefly in the book, was there's this church called San Clemente, which is near the Colosseum. And there you get a real sense of this sort of historical, the layers of history in a city, because you go into the church and it's a 12th century church, so quite old, and you think, yes, it's a beautiful church. And then you go into the gift shop, and there's a little wooden door inside, and you can go down a flight of steps. And then you're back into the 4th century, because beneath the church is a 4th century church, so much older. And there were beautiful frescoes on the wall. But you can go still further down, and you go down another flight of steps, and you're back to the 1st century. And you can actually walk along the streets of 1st century Rome, and there's a pagan temple underneath these two churches. You have a pagan temple, a temple to Mithras, and you can actually look in this temple and see the benches where people sat. And there, that was really extraordinary experience, I thought, because you're underneath Rome. You know, I don't know how many feet down you are. I mean, it's so deep that it's freezing cold down there, even though it's sort of 35 degrees up in the street level. And it was just an amazing visualization of this idea that I try and get across in the book, of the different layeredness of history in cities. So cities often have, as we were just saying, quite sort of modern problems like congestion, and you find actually that's a very old problem. So yeah, I'm trying to get across that sort of idea of history, which that church kind of encapsulates for me, that visit to the church. It's rather beautiful.
Well, and you use the phrase awareness of ghosts, the idea of just thinking about on this spot, there were Etruscans maybe walking there, and Roman Republican senators over there, and an emperor over there, and medieval Italians here, and just this, all these people who've been here before.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, you're right. Ghosts. I sort of literally don't believe in ghosts, but definitely that idea that it comes partly, as well as we were talking earlier about walking through the cities, and you get that sense certainly in European cities, I suppose, but also in Chinese cities, some very old cities, and partly in sort of Japanese cities I've been to, the age of them is just extraordinary. And you have this sense of previous occupants of the city. And that's for me, that's when I go to a city, that's sort of what I'm looking for. I like that idea that there's a past there, that there's a whole generation of people who have used this city and had similar experiences in it. And that's one of the things I wanted to celebrate in the book, that it's not just you hear a lot of stories about mega cities and slums. And this is true, they're huge problems and they have to be tackled, but they're not new in one sense, and that they're always people there who are trying to better their lives. And yeah, you just need to hold on to that idea that there's a great history there that was worth celebrating, I think.
We'll go back to the phones now, and you can join in at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Tell us about a great visit to a city, a great experience, great food you've had while traveling in a city. 800-642-1234. Jerry in Waterford is with us now. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. I just wanted to make a couple comments. I know when a number of years ago when we were in San Francisco, we were walking down along the shore there in San Francisco, and I picked up a book called My San Francisco by Ian Fleming, and used that as a tour guide. And boy, that took us into areas that we never would have got into if we had not had that book as a reference. Went back in the working area of the wharfs there, and actually got to go on some of the ships, some of the working ships, and talk to the people there, talk to the crew members, etc. And that was very, very interesting. And here in Milwaukee, a number of years ago, I did a walking tour down in Milwaukee and went from various buildings that they had there, and found out about the history of the buildings and the history of Milwaukee, and that was also very, very interesting.
Thank you, Jerry, for the call. P.D. Smith, a couple threads there we could pick up. Let's start with his visit to San Francisco, not just hitting the tourist sites, but following this walking tour, getting off the beaten path and seeing some of working San Francisco in action.
Yes, well, again, walking, it's important. You can really discover sort of aspects of cities that you wouldn't have done with just reading a guidebook or a history book. But yeah, walking's important, I think, for finding out about cities. That's very good, yeah.
And then the other one is learning about the history of a city that you might already be familiar with, like Milwaukee in this case, and, oh, that's why that building is there and when it arrived.
Yes, well, that's one of the beauties of guidebooks, I suppose. Yeah, well, hopefully my book will do that to a certain extent, although it's not meant as a sort of guidebook, I suppose, in the way that you'd go to a specific city. It's a sort of mix of lots and lots of cities, I suppose. But, yes, guidebooks are important. You do need, I mean, as I say, when we went to Tokyo, we got a guide, so a sort of walking guidebook, I suppose. And they were very good at bringing out the sort of the history of a place. But guidebooks are important, otherwise there's a certain amount, you can pick up the atmosphere of a city from walking around, sitting in a cafe or something and watching people. But sometimes it's really good to place it in a historical context and sort of find something out about a building, which can sometimes bring a whole sort of street alive for you and show you how it was used in the past. Yes, that's important, yeah.
Join in at 1-800-642-1234 with your questions about cities, with your memories of a city, your dream of seeing a city that you haven't been to yet. Joel in Middleton is on the line now. Hi, Joel.
Hi there. Actually, I was going to talk about, and I will talk about Agra, but I also want to bring up Kathmandu, Agra, home of the Taj Mahal, I should add. I was walking around Kathmandu, and I took a rest on a stone bench, a little triangular shrine-like park that later on that evening I come to find out was built. It was a shrine built by the Emperor Ashoka, the first Buddhist emperor of India in the 5th century. And so that means that little triangular shrine, the streets have been that way for almost 2,000 years in that same layout.
And does that strike you, Joel, coming from America? I mean, an old building here worthy of historic preservation in Wisconsin might be 80, 90 years old. What does that make you feel like, being around that 2,000-year-old thing?
Well, I knew that I was in some place special. I don't know how to describe it differently, but I looked around. I saw the intricacy of the stone carvings. I was sitting in this place. It was very calming. And it was very relaxing, and I just knew it was someplace different. And so I found a book that would tell me about it, and lo and behold, here it is, an emperor who united the subcontinent by killing tens if not hundreds of thousands of people, and then becomes a Buddhist himself and unifies the country under Buddhist rule and becomes a pacifist. The thing about Agra that I would say is that if people go there just for the Taj Mahal, they're missing a lot. The fort built by the son of Shah Jahan Shah, who built the Taj, is equally, if not more, impressive because it's got all the same kind of white marble and precious stone inlays, but it also has this massive fort architecture everywhere, and it's just incredibly impressive. You could spend days there.
Joel, was this trip kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing, or do you do a lot of world
traveling?
Count
on it. Count on it. I was an anthropology student at the time, and so 15 hours of study abroad in the Himalayas in India? Are you crazy? Am I going to pass that up?
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Joel. Life-changing memories from visiting cities around the world, P.D. Smith. Is that part of the sense of wonder you're hoping to create?
Yes, certainly. Well, it's good to hear people talking about being moved by the history of cities. That's definitely what I'm interested in writing this book, certainly. Now, it's important, yes. Yes, I find that very interesting, actually, yeah.
Now, a question I keep posing to listeners, we'll see if we get any takers, a city that we would like to see someday, our dream city. Call in with the city you'd like to see at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Money's no object. Maybe time travel is no object. Now, P.D. Smith, I want to ask you this question. Where's a place you haven't been that you'd like to go?
Well, to be honest, there are quite a few cities that I'd like to go to that I haven't been, actually. This book was sort of historical in a sense, so I didn't actually travel around to research it. It's not a travel book in that sense. But I have been to quite a few cities, obviously. I'd like to go to Rio. That's one place I'd like to go to. And to be honest, you were talking about San Francisco, and I haven't been to San Francisco either. That sounds like a fantastic city. I heard a lot about that. But if you were talking about time travel, Berlin is a city I've been to, obviously, in the present day. But Berlin in the 1920s, so the sort of golden 20s, when it was a very sort of chaotic, it's a dangerous place in some ways, politically. But it was also an incredibly sort of creative, dynamic city. And you've got people there in science, like Einstein working there, and in the arts, so like in writing plays, you've got Bertolt Brecht, writing novels, you've got Alfred Döblin. And also British writers like Auden and that were there, and artists like George Grosz. So an incredibly creative, dynamic city. So that would be one place I'd like to travel back to, I think, through time.
Well, what a slice out of time, too, because you're one decade off from Nazis on one end and World War One on the other. But this amazing capsule in time
between those. One of the strange things about it is that, as you say, it's a very dangerous city. There were sort of running street battles on the streets between communists and National Socialists. And yet it also has this sort of this really dynamic, creative edge to it. And that's something about sort of very creative cities, that sometimes they can be quite difficult places to live in, almost dangerous. But that's why they're sort of edgy. They have that sort of buzz to them that makes them very creative. Yes, that's what I'd go back to Berlin, I think.
And before we pick up the phones, I'll answer my own question. I haven't done a lot of world traveling. I think maybe at the top of my list, Istanbul. And I think partly because I'm a history nerd and you've got Byzantine history, Ottoman history. So it was this crossroads of the world and so much to see there. Is that a place you've been, first of all?
I haven't been there, actually. No, that is an amazing city from what I've heard. Yes, I haven't been there. I should go there.
Yeah, someday that'll be on my bucket list.
That's a great choice. Yes, yeah.
Back to the phones now at 800-642-1234, and we've got George in Milwaukee. Hi, George.
Hey, nice show. One of the ways that I've gotten to appreciate cities in more depth is by going on different kinds of tours, and I think there's a number of cities in North America now that do what they're called doors open days, or sometimes they're called open house. For instance, New York, Toronto, Denver, Chicago, Milwaukee actually had their first one last year and is going to have another one this September, called Doors Open Milwaukee. At any rate, the idea is opening up maybe 100 to 200, 300 buildings, depending on the size of the city, free of charge to the public over a weekend so they can come in and look around and see interior spaces that they usually can't get into.
So you just, what is this, people's houses and workplaces?
No, it's not houses. Oh, okay. It's basically public buildings. So it can be everything from, you know, the backstage at a theater to the top of a skyscraper observation deck that's usually not open. All sorts of kinds of buildings, industrial spaces, schools, libraries, entertainment venues. It's really complete.
So you're kind of pulling back the curtain. What's the best thing you've seen doing this, George?
Well, let's see. Last year, when we had it here in Milwaukee, I think just being able to go up, for instance, to the top of the U.S. Bank building, which is the tallest structure in the state, looking out, great view, you know, of Milwaukee from there. That's very impressive. Funny, though, people are oftentimes interested in kind of quirky things. Like I know one of the more popular venues in Toronto was the station where they wash buses and let parents and kids get inside buses and they go through these giant scrubbers. And so interior spaces that are even of more industrial nature tend to be big draws also.
Wow, that sounds like a great program. P.D. Smith, what do you think?
Yes, that's a great idea. I believe they do that in London, too, where they open up. I think there's one day a year where they open up certain buildings, as you say. That, yes, it is a good idea. Yes, yes. It reveals a kind of the hidden side to cities. Yes.
These things all sound like a lot of fun, and I want to weigh that against the obligatory stuff. You go to New York, you have to, what, go to the Empire State Building, Statue of Liberty, blah, 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 and you have to hit that checklist. How important is hitting those obligatory tourist sites when you're visiting a city?
Yes, well, I was saying earlier that I went to New York as a tourist, and yes, certainly I went to the Empire State Building, and Ellis Island was another incredible place. I mean, some of these places, they're like cliches, and they seem, yes, you're so familiar with them almost from seeing them on TV and things. But I think it is important in some ways to go to some of these places and maybe read something about the history of them. And I found Ellis Island extraordinarily moving, actually, as a place. Just reading some of the accounts of these immigrants coming into America. It was. I did a piece in the book on it afterwards, and I kept thinking back to it, just going there. And I did. It is important to go to some of these places, even though they are very sort of touristy places, for want of a better word. But yes, you should also see a sort of just sort of let your feet guide you to a certain extent, and just go through some of the streets on your own without a guidebook, and just absorb some of the sense of the place, so rather than looking at them, as you say, Empire State Buildings, these sort of iconic things. So you need a bit of both, I think, is probably the answer to that.
Thanks for the call, George. We have another George on the line now in Phillips. Hi, George.
Hi. Great program. The comment on, the foreign cities. My engineer and I did a lot of work for Johnson's Wax down in Central and South America. And the guidebooks are fine, but being a northern Wisconsin boy, I always carried a compass in my pocket, and that saved our butts a lot of times, especially in a place like Buenos Aires, which, you know, we walked our fannies off down there, and you know, we never got lost because we just tracked back through the compass, and it was
an excellent idea, actually. Yeah,
you know, just a little pocket compass, and yeah. No bigger than a quarter, at least it gave you some reference.
And George, while you were wandering in Buenos Aires or wherever, do you have a memory that sticks with you? Something that you just stumbled across that you wouldn't have otherwise?
Yeah, to tell you the truth, yes. Well, we got down by the docks, by the shipping docks, where there was ships sunk in the water, and it was kind of messy down there, but we passed up a little tobacco shop, and somebody told us that, yeah, the tobacco shop was just a little thing, and that's where Aristotle Onassis started. And
no kidding.
It was a good story, you know. Because Argentina was shipping shipload after shipload of beef. You eat beef anywhere in Europe, it's probably from Argentina. You wouldn't believe the herds of cattle down there on the Pampas. But they'd ship these beef over to Europe, and the ships would come back, and they'd load up another load. Well, Onassis had the idea, why bring the ship back empty? So he somehow got an old ship that didn't sink right away, and he filled it up with cobblestones in Europe, brought them back. All of Buenos Aires is cobblestone. That's how Onassis started. That's how he got out of the tobacco shop.
What a great story, George. I'm glad you got off the beaten path and encountered that. How about you, P.D. Smith, while you were lost in a city somewhere? Just give us an anecdote, something you discovered, learned, were surprised by.
Yeah. Oh, that's a difficult question.
There have been a lot, I'm guessing.
Well, I suppose one of the cities I have been sort of lost in is, I suppose everyone who's been there probably has been, is Venice. Where you can look at a map, but it's almost a waste of time. And the whole point of sort of wandering around Venice is sort of to get lost, because it's a kind of labyrinth. It's a bit like, some of the castles in England, they have these literally a labyrinth, a maze made out of hedges and things, and you wander around it, and the whole idea is you get lost, and everyone gets lost. And it seems to be almost the whole purpose of going to Venice is just you wander around these little alleyways, and a lot of them look almost identical. They are incredibly beautiful, all the sort of the crumbling stone and that, and the colours of them, and then you come out on a little square perhaps, and you're sort of looking around trying to find the name of the square, and you probably can't see it anywhere. And that's, in a sense, that whole place, that whole city, for me anyway, the point there is just to sort of get lost, because it's just, you can't get seriously lost, I suppose. It's such a small place, you can probably walk across it a day or something. It's tiny, but for me, that is an incredibly beautiful city, and yeah, getting lost there is the whole point in some ways.
Thanks for the call, George. That's P.D. Smith. He's author of City, a guidebook for the urban age. We're talking about cities, what to do when you visit a city, why we should appreciate them, what they mean to us as humans. 800-642-1234 if you want to join in. 800-642-1234. Share your favorite urban travel memory, experience, or wish list. 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob Ferret filling in for Kathleen Dunn this week here in the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up tomorrow, a couple of good conversations in the works. At 9, how opinionated journalism may be better at motivating people who are politically unengaged, better than nonpartisan media. After 10, the continued allure of fairy tales. Some good talks ahead this hour. We're having a lot of fun talking about cities with P.D. Smith, talking about his new book, City, a Guidebook for the Urban Age, and how to appreciate a city when you go traveling. Next on the phones is Joe in Milwaukee. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Joe, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Good show. Cities certainly are the very basis of our civilization. We wouldn't be who we are without them. And I'm an American, but I've lived abroad for 37 years, and I've visited most of the world's major cities. One that stands out for me, most of my time is spent in Europe and Canada, but the one that stands out most, and I've gone back to it again and again and again, I've spent as long as a year there, is Paris. I don't think, in my estimation, and as I said, I've been to the cities that have been discussed on the program, but no city can compare to it. I guess much of it has to do with a man by the name of Baron Haussmann, who redesigned it back in the late 19th century, tore down much of the medieval part of the city, but left enough of the old there so that you can appreciate both. And it's an extraordinary city to walk around, and I think it is statistically the most visited city in the world. Some incredible figure, like 50 million people. It sounds almost unbelievable, but about 50 million people visit it every year. And I guess it's, you know, if you're doing kind of a whirlwind tour of Europe, it's usually one of the cities that's always on the tour. And as I said, it's a city that, and that's not true of other places that I've been, that I'd go back again and again and again to. But Paris is certainly one of those.
Gotcha. Thanks a lot for the call, Joe. P.D. Smith, Paris.
Yes, I mean, he's absolutely right. Joe's right. It's a beautiful city. It really is. And he's right also to point out that the idea that it was rebuilt in the 1850s by Baron Haussmann. And so it's an interesting example of a city which was sort of more or less completely destroyed in a way and built in a modern, what was then a modern style. But when we go there now, you don't really sort of notice that sort of modern style. It just feels like an incredibly spacious, beautiful city. But yes, the cost of it was that you lost all that sort of medieval city. So when I was talking about Venice or Rome or something, or there are parts of London where you still have these very narrow roads, which are very medieval, Paris sort of lost most of that. But the result is you get a beautiful city. So it's always a difficult balance to strike when you're talking about sort of renovating or redesigning a city as to what you're going to lose and what you're going to gain. And one thing they gained was a new sort of a sewer system under the city, which of course is an amazing thing, as we know, in London, because London also at the similar time was rebuilding its sewer network. So sometimes you have to lose some very old buildings and old street plans, perhaps, in order to gain a much more livable city. So, yes, I agree completely. Paris is a beautiful city. You should definitely go there.
Thanks for the call, Joe, and hope you get back to Paris. Denny is with us next. Denny is in Waupaca. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. One of the things I do is have an Irish public house with very good food in central Wisconsin, and my partner and I like to research, and what we found out, and we like to hit cities across the country other than the majors, like New York City and Chicago. So we'll pick a city and call a college coffee shop rather than looking at the web or the Chamber of Commerce and ask those coffee shops, where's the best eclectic food and who's making the best craft beers? And it's really amazing what you can find that's not listed anywhere else. And we've done it from Burlington, Vermont to San Francisco to Louisiana to Florida, all over. And we've really found some hidden gems that way.
What's been the best hidden gem, if you can pick just one?
Burlington, Vermont. Wasn't even close. 90% of the food there we ate was locally grown. Our number one and two places in over 400 we've been to are both there.
No kidding.
And, they brew their own beers in the basement, serve all locally grown food, very simple, very elegantly prepared. We can't wait to go back.
Thanks a lot for the call, Denny. Well, there's a great tip there, I think, P.D. Smith. Not the guidebook, but just call the local coffee shops and ask where they think you should go.
Yeah, definitely. Just sort of talking to local people. If you can speak the language when you go to another city, that's true. Definitely. You need to talk to the people there and sort of see what they're eating. That's where you can't necessarily always rely on guidebooks. It's better to do your own research, in a sense. Yes, that's true.
Thanks for the call. Paul in Boise, Idaho is up next. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I was listening to your program, and you yourself said, get somebody with the time change thing. Well, we can do it with your city, just with a different name. I'd like to go to Constantinople.
Uh-huh. And do you have an era in mind, or a year?
Any and all. Yeah. When, everybody around there came in on a camel, not on a jet airliner.
Or a ship, yeah. Why? What appeals to you about seeing old Constantinople?
Just the diversity. The city sits on two continents. The city sits on all shipping, all transportation lanes of the days between Asia and Europe. And it's wild still, but it had to be a whole different place at a whole different time.
Great. That sounds like a lot of fun, Paul. Yeah, Constantinople, P.D. Smith, it was not the center of the world exactly, but the center of a big piece of the world back then.
Yes, that's true. Yes, a great trading city. Yes, well, it was like Venice was, who we were just talking about. And a lot of these cities are built on trade. That's immensely important. But if I can go back to your the idea of the time travel, I thought of another city I'd quite like.
Oh, good.
It's Babylon, from one of the very earliest cities, so sort of 4,000 years ago. And on the cover of my book, they put a picture. I mean, that wasn't my idea, but they put a picture of the Tower of Babylon. And in so many ways, this city has colored our view of cities now. And the Tower of Babylon has become a story through the Bible of sort of urban hubris and the idea that we can sort of create a realm, a sort of environment, perhaps, like the cities are, which is sort of competes, in a sense, with God's power. And so it's sort of, I think a lot of our sort of ambivalence towards cities comes from these sorts of stories of the Tower of Babylon and the idea of the fall of Babylon. In the 19th century, for example, in Britain, there was a famous artist, John Martin, who painted this painting of the fall of Babylon, a huge painting, very, very detailed. And you can see the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. You can see the great ziggurat, which was the Tower of Babylon. It was actually a historical structure, so it really existed. And he's showing it being invaded in about 530 BC, and that this is the fall of the city. And in London, when it was exhibited, London was then the greatest city in the world, and it was the biggest city. It was sort of 6 million people or so lived there, and no one had seen a city this big before. And people saw this as a sort of, it symbolized the fate, probably, of London, that London itself would also fall, even though it was a really great city and amazing architecture and everything. It too would one day fall because everything sort of goes back to the dust out of which it was made. So it's an example of where sort of Babylon, this sort of 4,000-year-old city, is colouring our views of how we see cities today. So, well, yeah, but I'd like to go back there and have a look at that.
But then, as you mentioned earlier, it doesn't always crumble away. I mean, you've got Rome with the ruins of 2,000 years ago, and you've got modern Rome right alongside it.
That's true, yes, yes. Well, cities are often redeveloped, and you get, with the very oldest cities in Mesopotamia, are sort of 5,000-6,000 years old, they sort of disappeared, and there's now a huge mound, tell, they call it in Arabic, of ruins and dust. So all you can see when you look across the landscape is just this sort of mound of dust. And that's created by these different layers of habitation. So what's happening in Rome is basically a new layer, a modern city is being built on the sort of older layers. And in London, I think there's, I believe it's something like 20 feet of debris separates modern street level from the Roman street level, for example, sort of 2,000 years ago. So, that's a sort of natural process of building on it. So you do still get this sort of modern habitation there. But one day, maybe one day Rome won't be there, and then you just have a sort of mound in the landscape or something.
And an archaeologist's dream.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Back to the phones now with Margaret in Madison. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. My most amazing city was Timbuktu. I went there about 8 years ago, and it had been on my bucket list for a long time, and it was the most incredible place. Even though it's just a dusty city on the edge of the Sahara, about 800 years ago, it was the center of learning for the world. And they have these beautiful manuscripts written in Arabic that are 700 and 800 years old that you can look at, and some of them you can actually touch.
Margaret, from the American perspective, that's pretty far off the beaten path. What led you to go to Timbuktu?
I had romantic notions about it. I studied African languages and literature, and so I've always wanted to go places in Africa, but Timbuktu struck me as a unique place.
Gotcha.
And as I said, the city is nothing remarkable, but the manuscripts are a world treasure.
Great. Thanks, Margaret. P.D. Smith, before responding, I'm going to get another call in from Jody in Madison. She has a couple cities to mention. Hi, Jody.
Hi. I was going to say Istanbul, but I know you already talked about it. Mm-hmm. So then I would bring up Budapest, which I really loved. I was there about 25 years ago, so before the wall came down, and nobody spoke English, which I love. I didn't speak German or Hungarian, so I had a very interesting time there. And there was a wonderful little museum up on one of the hills in Buda that tells all about the history of the area and how it was overrun all the time. And how people would have to hide out, and I love that.
Great. Thanks. A couple of great experiences there, P.D. Smith, from Timbuktu to Istanbul to Budapest.
Yes, I was wondering, the idea of Timbuktu sounded wonderful. I've not been there, but the idea of writing was particularly interesting, the manuscripts there, because writing emerges in cities, so sort of 5,000 years ago or so, in Mesopotamia. So, and also the idea of libraries, theatres, galleries, all these sort of great sort of cultural institutions. They're all essentially urban institutions. So, that was a very fascinating explanation of the Timbuktu. Yes, I'd love to go there. That sounds wonderful, yeah.
We just have a couple of minutes left, and oddly enough, one of the things I had meant to talk about right at the beginning, we wandered off on a different path, but you talk about going to parks in cities as a great first thing to do. Why parks?
Oh, yes. Maybe that's a slightly unconventional thing. When you're talking about cities, you think you're getting away from nature. But that's really just a sort of personal thing for me. I've always rather loved urban parks. it's not that I want to get away from the city, but it's just that idea. I mean, there's a in London, there's an area called Bloomsbury, which is made up of these beautiful Georgian squares of houses, terraced houses, row houses. And in the middle of them, there's often a small garden, which is sometimes fenced off. And now they're mostly public, although not always. And there's one called Russell Square, which is reasonably large. And you can go and sit in the middle of it, and there's beautiful trees around you. And you can still hear the cars going by. And sometimes in winter, when there are no leaves on the trees, you can see them going by on the roads all around you. But it's just that sort of, there's something quite special about being in a public park or a garden in the middle of a really big, dense city. I mean, Central Park in New York is a gorgeous park, and it's really lovely for that same reason. You can sit in, you can sit there, and you can often see these sort of really tall skyscraper buildings all the way around it, like a wall. And just below them, they're the tops of the trees. And it's just that sort of contrast between the greenery and the city. I quite like that. That's for me, that's quite special. And I often go to parks in cities and try to seek them out because I find them quite. There's something really entrancing about them. I'm not quite sure what it is exactly.
Well, I agree. And if you ever do make that trip to San Francisco, I recommend Golden Gate Park and the Presidio Park. I've had some great walks when I go out to visit my brother there.
All right, I'll make a note of that. Brilliant, yeah.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a really interesting hour. Glad you could join us.
It's been really good. Thank you very much.
That was P.D. Smith. He's author of City, a Guidebook for the Urban Age. Thanks to Brett Jaspers and Rhonda Fanning for producing today's programs. Thanks to Marika Suval for on-air production today. Thanks to you for listening and all of your great calls. It's been a lot of fun. I'm back in tomorrow. We'll talk fairy tales at this time, what they mean, how they've changed over the years. Larry Mueller is coming up next. He'll be talking about stargazing. Stick around. Lots to talk about. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.